Do you think the BRICS nations are going to save us from the New World Order? Do you get excited when you think about how Putin or Xi or the mullahs in Iran are sticking it to the evil, satanic US-real globalists? Do you find yourself making excuses for why China, Iran, Russia, and all the other axes of resistance nations locked their citizens down for the scamdemic exactly like the US and all the Western governments did? Have you thought Russia is just weeks away from defeating the Ukro-Nazis for the last 4 years? Do you believe that the new BRICS-based interoperable CBDC currency system is going to save us from the big tech oligarchs? Well, then you need to snap out of it, because you have a serious case of multipolaritis, and I've got the cure. It's called history. Let's dive deep. I promise this'll only hurt a little.
You're listening to The Corbett Report.
Welcome back, friends. Welcome back to another edition of The Corbett Report. I'm your host, James Corbett of CorbettReport.com, coming to you, as always, from the sunny climes of Western Japan, here in early April of 2026, with episode 497 of The Corbett Report podcast. The multipolar world order is the New World Order. Yes, you've probably heard some variation of this by now. Putin and Xi and the Iranians and all of the Axis resistance are totally sticking it to the globalists with their bold rhetoric, guys.
We safeguard the international system with the United Nations at its core. Support the multilateral trading system centered on the World Trade Organization. We should advocate for equal and orderly multipolarization of the world, inclusive economic globalization, and promote the construction of a more just and equitable global governance system.
In my speech at the 70th session of the UN General Assembly, I mentioned that we should develop a comprehensive approach to addressing the climate change problem. In this context, let me affirm once again our proposal to convene a scientific forum under the aegis of the United Nations, which will serve the platform to discuss various problems, not only those linked to climate change, but also those linked to depletion of natural resources and degradation of the human habitat. Ladies and gentlemen, we hope that through concerted efforts, we will be able to develop a new climate agreement that will replace the Kyoto Protocol and that will serve the interests of all states and peoples after 2020.
Iranian Supreme Leader Ayatollah Ali Khamenei has received his first dose of a homegrown COVID-19 vaccine amid an effort by the country to speed up its vaccination rollout. TV showed Khamenei receiving what it said was the Coviran Barakat vaccine developed by a state-affiliated conglomerate and approved for public use earlier this month.
There's only one slight problem with this thesis. Turns out that Putin and Xi and the Iranian mullahs and all the other Axis of Resistance members sound exactly like the globalists they're supposed to be opposing.
And now's the time when things are shifting. There's going to be a new world order out there, and we've got to lead it. We've got to unite the rest of the free world in doing it.
Side by side, Prince and PM arrive in Belém. Offering a hand to Brazil's President Lula with the unenviable task of keeping the ailing 30-year-old UN climate process alive.
It's a two-dose summer for Trudeau, the Prime Minister receiving his second shot while telling Canadians the finish line is in sight.
With 68 million doses coming in by the end of July, that's mathematically enough for everyone in Canada to get two doses.
A curious state of affairs indeed. But you may be tempted, if you are historically ignorant, to think that these are just some cherry-picked clips that don't amount to much. No, this isn't what the Axis of Resistance, the BRICS saviors, are really about, James, and you will no doubt cite other bits of information or pieces of clips of people who have spoken about this issue in the past. But to do so would be a disservice to the voluminous documentation that demonstrates that the BRICS multipolar world order that is being touted in certain sectors of the supposedly alternative media is, in fact, a perfect historical continuity from what has been forwarded by the conspirators, the would-be rulers of humanity, for demonstrably over a century. And I can say that with some degree of certainty because, to some extent, that has been one of the core primary research objectives of the Corbett Report over the past two decades, and I have the receipts to prove it. So, if you have been following the Corbett Report for, say, the last 19 years, you should be well situated to understand what I am about to present. But if you are not, buckle up, hold on, get a pen and paper, because there's a lot of information that is going to be data dumped right into your brain as I try to condense two decades of research into a few short minutes here in this podcast. So buckle up and hold on. And we're going to document this line of historical continuity going back to the late 19th century through a series of reports that I have done in the past on these issues. And we're going to start back in 1891 with the creation of a secret society modeled on the Jesuits and populated by people lusting after a global order based on an Anglo-American alliance that would have important ramifications for the world in the future. To understand this conspiracy, we must turn not to Sarajevo and the conclave of Serbian nationalists plotting their assassination in the summer of 1914, but to a chilly drawing room in London in the winter of 1891. There, three of the most important men of the age, men whose names are but dimly remembered today, are taking the first concrete steps toward forming a secret society that they have been discussing amongst themselves for years. The group that springs from this meeting will go on to leverage the wealth and power of its members to shape the course of history, and, 23 years later, will drive the world into the first truly global war. Present at the meeting that day, William T. Stead, famed newspaper editor whose Pall Mall Gazette broke ground as a pioneer of tabloid journalism and whose Review of Reviews was enormously influential throughout the English-speaking world. Reginald Brett, later known as Lord Esher, an historian and politician who became friend, confidant, and advisor to Queen Victoria, King Edward VII, and King George V, and who was known as one of the primary powers behind the throne of his era. And Cecil Rhodes, the enormously wealthy diamond magnate whose exploits in South Africa and ambition to transform the African continent would earn him the nickname of Colossus by the satirists of the day. From the formation of that secret society, we had, as famed Georgetown professor Carol Quigley later noted, the creation of a group that was responsible for an interlocking series of organizations around the world, including the Council on Foreign Relations in the United States and the Royal Institute of International Affairs in the UK, known as Chatham House, for the location of its London headquarters, that were devoted to bringing about that idea of a global system of governance.
The inquiry got together in Paris and agreed to establish an organization out of which came the Royal Institute of International Affairs. And that Royal Institute of International Affairs had branches in all of the Commonwealth countries, Australia, New Zealand, South Africa, Canada, eventually in India, and they even I think had one somewhere else, Pakistan, when it divided, they established one. But in the United States, of course, they didn't have to because they had the Council on Foreign Relations. But when they came over here, coming back from Paris, they found that a movement had begun here already to form a Council on Foreign Relations, so they moved in and took it over, and they could do that because they represented Morgan.
According to Quigley, the group was responsible for the Boer War, the establishment of the Rhodes Trust, the control of the Times, the formation of the League of Nations, the formation of the Royal Institute of International Affairs, and the appeasement of Nazi Germany, amongst other events. The machinations of that group of conspirators eventually led to, amongst other things, the advent of World War II, which is something that I will document in a future edition of the Corbett Report. But even before that war had ended, those same conspirators, acting under the guise of the Council on Foreign Relations, were directing the State Department on the creation of a gaggle of institutions that would, in the post-World War II era, steward over a system of global governance under the aegis of the United Nations. And for this, we can go all the way back to the Second World War, where back in 1939, as early as 1939, before the U.S. was even involved in the war, the CFR had founded something that they called the War and Peace Studies Group. This was founded, as I say, in 1939 and continued its work until 1945, funded with some $350,000 provided by the Rockefeller Foundation. Now, this group petitioned for the State Department to create a committee that would set America's post-war foreign policy and to be provided with research by the CFR study group. And that's exactly what happened. In March of 1942, the State Department set up just such a committee. It was indeed furnished with research by the CFR's War and Peace Studies Group, making for all manners, intents and purposes, the CFR an adjunct of the U.S. State Department or a member of the U.S. government in some functional capacity there for that key period of 1942 to 1945, in which it provided literally hundreds of pieces of research, including papers and policy papers and others that were provided again to the State Department through that committee that was set up in March 1942. And what actually resulted from that? Well, among other bodies, such august bodies as the UN's World Bank and International Monetary Fund, which were both heavily proposed and levied for by the group in 1941, 1942, including with articles in its in the Council on Foreign Relations Foreign Affairs publication. It was also the place where in the early 1940s, there was a heavy emphasis placed on the idea that there would need to be, in the post-war period, more of a consensus along the transatlantic lines, i.e. the United States, Canada, should be more in line with Europe when it comes to foreign policy decisions. And of course, that only makes sense in an environment, a post-war environment, in which the transatlantic relationship was being cemented in a lot of very concrete ways, not least of which, of course, being the cementing of the NATO Treaty in 1949. The creation of this web of interlocking organizations was intended from its very inception to become the foundation for the erection of an international order based, first and foremost, on an international monetary order in which all the currencies of the world would be pegged to a single unit of account, in this case, the US dollar. In addition to this international monetary order that the conspirators were hammering out at places like the Bretton Woods Conference, they were also working concertedly on the other key component of this New World Order governmental system that they were so interested in bringing about, namely the creation and formation of regional governmental units that could enact rules and regulations across international boundaries. And so it was that conspirator-led organizations like the Bilderberg Group, from its very first meetings, was focused on how to fuse Europe into a single common currency market, which could then be used as a springboard for a single regional governmental bloc. So it was that in 1955, the Bilderbergers met twice, in fact, and the third ever Bilderberg meeting occurred in September of 1955, the second taking place earlier in the year. And the third meeting was, the meeting minutes have since been leaked. They are available online, and of course, I'll link to them at CorbettReport.com so that you can actually find them and read them for yourself. But there are some pretty interesting snippets from those leaked documents, including the fact that the Bilderbergers were talking quite frankly about the, quote, pressing need to bring the German people, together with the other peoples of Europe, into a common market, end quote. And then, of course, the leaked documents also reveal, quote, a plan to arrive in the shortest possible time at the highest degree of integration, beginning with a common European market. That sounds like a pretty concise and coordinated and very well thought out agenda. And wouldn't you know it, lo and behold, just 2 years after that conference, there they are at the Treaty of Rome, signing the very documents that would become the foundation for the European Union. Wow, who would have thunk it? And the end result of all of these machinations was the creation of a totalizing system of control, not just of the human population, not just of the economy, but of the world and all of the natural resources in the world itself, to be stewarded over by the creation of a new international economic order and a series of regulations and controls under the guise of sustainable development and protecting the environment that would ensure the consolidation of as much control as possible into the hands of a few oligarchical elitists.
It has been their agenda from 1973, when the Trilateral Commission was formed, to create a new international economic order. That's what they said back then. It was all over their literature. And the only thing new that's come along since the 1930s is technocracy. And that's, you know, we see this, the policy being worked out in sustainable development and climate change and so on today. The patterns are unmistakable. People have to trust me on this for now. Read my book and you'll see why I'm saying this. The Trilateral Commission has been the action group that has brought us all this stuff that we're looking at today. They brought us Agenda 21 at the Rio conference in the first place. They brought us things like the Earth Charter. They brought us all the dialogue on the rhetoric on climate change. Al Gore, for instance, the poster boy for climate change, for Pete's sake, is a member of the Trilateral Commission. So we see these people's fingerprints all over this, and it's just astounding. You say, why would they be doing this? Why technocracy? Well, technocracy is about controlling resources. They want to take the resources away from people like you and me, and even governments, and even local governments, and state governments, and federal governments. They want to take the resources away and put them into a global trust for the common good.
All right, let's take a moment to collect our breath here, because that is a data dump of information. And if you think that that is all of the pieces on this cookie crumb trail leading towards the creation of this new world order, then you are sadly mistaken. If you are familiar with the Corbett Report and the work that I've been doing here for 19 years, you will know that this is just scratching the surface of the documentation that I could provide along this path. But I trust that you get the point by this point. There have been decades and decades, over a century, of documented work by a core and committed clique of conspirators towards the formation of a new international economic order, which will be the crown jewel of a global governmental system. And this system that they've been working towards for generations has gone under various names. The New World Order, or the International Rules-Based Order, as I was talking about with Ian Davis here on the Corbett Report just a few years ago. But it now goes by a different name, the Multipolar World Order, the BRICS World Order, which you may have heard about being touted in certain sectors of the supposedly alternative media as the solution to this crisis that's been created by these New World Order globalists, satanic U.S.-Israel pedophile conspirators. We're gonna completely undermine all of that with the Multipolar World Order, say these proponents. And they are urinating on your face and telling you it's raining, because when you start to even scratch the surface, you don't even have to scratch the surface. At very face value, these very same multipolaristas and champions of the new world order, the shinier, happier world order, are telling you exactly, word for word, the exact same things that the proponents of the old new world order have been telling you, lo, these many decades. Don't take my word for it. Take their word for it. As I demonstrated here on the Corbett Report a few short years ago, you can take almost any joint declaration by, say, Xi and Putin and see that it is absolutely, in every respect, the exact same globaloney garbage that is being proffered to us by the globalists that we all know and hate. Apparently, that was a joint statement of the Russian Federation and the People's Republic of China on the international relations entering a new era in the global sustainable development. But it's word for word exactly what I was just reading to you there. I mean, they're exactly what I just said. The development of process and phenomena, multipolarity, economic globalization, information society, cultural diversity. As the pandemic of new coronavirus infection continues, international regional security situation is complicating, blah, blah, blah. Champion universal human values, protect the United Nations-driven international architecture and international law-based world order, seek genuine multipolarity with the United Nations and its Security Council playing a central and coordinating role, promote more democratic institutional relations, blah, blah, blah. Democracy is a means of enhancing citizens' participation in government. Guarantee their people the right to take part, blah, blah, blah. Such attempts at hegemony pose serious threats to the world order. Besides, note that the Charter of the United Nations and the Universal Declaration of Human Rights sets out valuable goals. Oh, yeah, and we need to fulfill UN 2030 Agenda for Sustainable Development. It is vital to enhance partnership relations for the sake of global development. Sustainable development, of course. Strengthen cooperation with multilateral mechanisms, including the United Nations. Yes, UN 2030 Agenda. Accelerate the implementation of the UN 2030 Agenda with some of those wonderful vaccines and epidemics control, financing for development, climate change, sustainable development. Pick your globalist buzzword, jointly celebrating the 30th anniversary of the adoption of the UNFCC. And we commit ourselves to fighting for right alongside what the UNFCC is saying, and anything they say is good enough. Fight against the COVID-19 pandemic, protection of life. Oh, good. Oh, let's commend the wonderful quarantines and epidemic controls that Russia and China have implemented to crack down on their nations. Oh, yeah, let's get the United Nations playing a central role in terrorism and peacekeeping. Oh, it's exactly every single bit of it is exactly what I was just reading, but it's actually Russian. What? Putin and Xi pledging fealty to the United Nations? Lecturing us peons about the importance of the Sustainable Development Goals? Touting the benefits of the creation of the biosecurity state on the back of the scamdemic of COVID? Say it ain't so. Are you surprised by any of this? If so, then you have been paying attention to sources that tout the BRICS as the saviors against the globalist system of control, rather than sources that will detail the reality. Namely, that the BRICS was created by and then populated by the very same conspirators that have been bringing you this New World Order for generations.
The acronym BRIC was coined in 2001 by Jim O'Neill, who at the time was an economist with Goldman Sachs.
I thought it was quite clear that so-called emerging markets were going to become more important to businesses. And so I sort of played around with the idea, and I wrote a piece called The World Needs Better Economic BRICS, and the rest is history, so to speak.
The Asia Infrastructure Investment Bank and the New Development Bank, the BRICS countries are here to save the world from these IMF predatory monsters. And then, do you remember how immediately after the formation of the AIIB and the NDB, all of the various links, institutional links between those beasts and the World Bank IMF beasts started to be revealed? The fact that the first thing that happened was IMF chief at that time, Chief Crook Christine Lagarde, pledged cooperation with the AIIB, and then the World Bank chief, in June of 2015, the World Bank chief, Jim Yong Kim, issued a statement congratulating the AIIB on its formation, pledging to cooperate with an important new partner. And then in July, the New Development Bank president returned the favor, saying that, no, we are not rivals, we are complementary institutions. And then they actually signed an actual cooperation agreement later that summer. And then it turned out that the vice president of the BRICS New Development Bank that was going to be sticking it to the IMF, man, was also an executive board member of the IMF, who went on to, of course, pledge cooperation and joint action, and on and on and on. This, and the entire narrative in the lead up to the creation of this AIIB and the NDB was, oh, this is going to completely change the game. These guys are going to, and then the first thing that happened was institutionally, they said, we're not rivals, we're completely cooperating, let's sign every cooperation agreement, we're going to work together on joint projects, we are part of the system now. They got their seat at the table, And that was exactly what they wanted. And they didn't want to change the table. They didn't want to upset the apple cart. They didn't want to upset the gravy train. They just wanted to seat at the table. Once again, I want to stress that these are not just a few cherry-picked examples of a few factoids that seem to suggest something that isn't there. This is just the beginning of an exploration of this topic, one that I have talked about in much greater length in all of these cited sources. So please follow the links from the transcript of today's podcast at corbettreport.com/multipolar so you can start exploring all of these pieces of information in their greater context. And you can learn other bits and pieces of this puzzle. Like, for example, did you know that Putin's Eurasian Economic Union was explicitly modeled on the European Union, right down to its bureaucratic structure with a commission and a council, etc.? Well, it is. Or did you know, for example, that the SWIFT alternative that has been championed by China, the CIPS, the China Interbank Payment System, relies on the SWIFT network for 80% of its transactions, because they have, one of their first acts was to sign a memorandum of understanding with SWIFT to use SWIFT's network for the transmission of these SWIFT alternative payments. It goes on and on and on, and there is so much information about this. But one of the most amazing things is that now these sources that are telling you that the BRICS are the saviors and China and Russia are sticking it to the evil globalists are now trying to thread the needle by telling you that, say, for example, CBDCs are a good thing when they come from the BRICS. Or, for example, oh, I don't know, even the Bancor, which was the card-carrying eugenicist slash globalist conspirator John Maynard Keynes's rejected idea at the Bretton Woods conference, his stretch goal for the creation of a unit for an international monetary order. Hey, you know what, guys? It's kind of coming into view now that China, for example, is sticking it to the globalists, and that's a good thing.
And maybe one of the most ambitious announcements in that meeting was BRICSPay, an alternate payment system that doesn't rely on the US dollar at all. And the most interesting part about it is the controversial story of how it was created. Because in 2019, Switzerland's Bank of International Settlements started to work on CBDCs, central bank digital currencies, a global payment system to compete with crypto. So Switzerland, along with a couple partner banks, started to work on one of the highest profile payment systems in the world called Project mBridge. And in 2021, they reached what's called the MVP, or the minimum viable product phase, meaning they tested it, it worked, and they were able to transport billions of dollars across the world instantaneously for almost nothing. And just a little over a week ago, the BIS suddenly backed out of the project. Now, the rumor behind why they backed out after its success was because of who was part of creating mBridge. It was China, United Arab Emirates, and Iran, which just happened to become the new members of the BRICS alliance. So the worry is that mBridge could be taken and used by people like Putin and Russia to create their own system for the BRICS countries.
To the extent that China and other countries make loans to increase capital investment, above all by governments, in the form of infrastructure, to lower the economy's cost of doing business by having better transportation, better communications, better public infrastructure in general, then this is a productive loan. That's and Keynes's Bancor was designed to make sure that countries followed this philosophy of make productive loans, not unproductive usury type loans.
Are you starting to see what is going on here? Well, if not, as I say, you have dozens and dozens and dozens and dozens of hours of exploration that you could do in the hyperlinks in the transcript for today's episode at corbettreport.com/multipolar to find more and more and more information along these very lines. But hopefully the broader picture of what is happening is starting to come into view for you. But if you need it in even more excruciating detail, I'll give you another source that would be another investment of hours and hours of research, and many dozens of hours of research from the various cookie crumbs that are being offered here. I am talking about an article that was written by Hrvoje Morić of Geopolitics and Empire and released late last month. It's called Multipolarity as World Government 3.0 and its Pied Pipers, and it's available right now at the Geopolitics and Empire Substack. I will wholeheartedly and full-throatedly commend this article to your attention. It is an incredibly detailed article, and I will not attempt to do it justice here by just quoting a line or two, although I will just draw your attention to the sort of thesis statement of this at the top of the article. BRICS has been around for over a decade. The term multipolarity, on the other hand, has been bandied about for at least over half a century. BRICS multipolarity is sold as a counterweight and dialectical response or solution to Western imperial globalism, but is it really? And spoiler, the answer is no, but there's a lot more information in there. But as he goes on to point out, Morić says, there are no good guys here, no good actors. Every nation state is run by an oligarchic cartel and mafia penetrated by this international class. Ask any average citizen of any country, and many will tell you, yes, their government is corrupt and run by an oligarchy that extracts as much as it can for itself and cares nothing for its citizenry. That has been my experience living in America, Croatia, Mexico, Kazakhstan, and visiting Russia. And might I parenthetically add, that's been my experience living in Japan and Canada and Ireland and visiting many, many other countries along the waypoint. Yes, these are oligarchs who presume to rule over broad swaths of the human population and who conspire together to consolidate their power and control over the masses. This is not new. This is not conspiracy theory. This is conspiracy reality, documented conspiracy reality, really stretching back throughout all of recorded human history, but certainly, as we have seen today, documentably and on the record, stretching back over a century. And Morić does his own compilation of this information in excruciatingly detailed fashion, talking about the formation of the EU empire and how that fascist state was constructed as the model for this regional governmental system, as well as, oh, things like the 15-minute cities that you've been hearing about that, again, are very, very old news, going back to the USSR and the technocratic projects and experiments that they had there, which I've talked about before on the Corbett Report. He goes through the EU. Oh, how about a kind of EU in Latin America? Or, oh, how about a European Union in Central America? Or how about the Eurasian Economic Union that I mentioned parenthetically earlier? How about the EU offering a model for unifying the Middle East? Yes, it's almost like a regional governmental system is coming into view, like that tech native America that I was talking about earlier this year on my podcast about what is Greenland really about. And yes, a system of technates, regional governments. It's, again, an idea that stretches back at least a century at this point. Canada could join the EU, French foreign minister says. Oh, yippee. And it goes through and talks about the creation of the BRICS and the supposed multipolar world order and how that's coming into view. Of course, touted by all of our favorites, Gorbachev backs world government, everyone else too. And there are many, many, many very specific examples of people touting this very system of control, right up, of course, to the point of the BRICS and their creation. And we can talk about, yes, Mao was a Yaley. Did you know that? Well, you would if you knew, for example, my work on China and the New World Order, or it is documented here. You can talk about many other aspects of this. And then, after talking about the high priests of globalism and multipolarism that are here to save the day, for example, Jeffrey Sachs, who has repeatedly made the case for world government based on regions, i.e. multipolarity.
We need a global government, that's the UN. We need a regional government, that's the European Union.
Yes, thank you, Jeffrey Sachs. Wow, what a straight shooter. And I'm sure that is the way out of the problem that these globalists have constructed. A better, kinder, happier, friendlier global government based on nice regions of the world working together, etc., etc. And this article goes into so much more detail on so many different aspects of this, talking very specifically and then After all of that information presented, a fascinating and detailed deep dive on some of the characters who have arisen in recent years and decades to tout this multipolar world government and some of their connections and the money and where this is coming from and the types of people that are pimping this new world order idea under the guise of the multipolar world order. Once again, I cannot possibly do justice to this article and its scope and depth and the number of sources that are being cited here in a short podcast like this one. So please go and read Multipolarity as World Government 3.0 and its Pied Pipers in its entirety. Take notes. There's a lot to learn from this article. And it's exactly that reason that I had the chance recently to talk to Hrvoje Morić about this article and about Multipolarity as World Government 3.0. All right, Multipolarity as World Government 3.0. So what is World Government 1.0 and 2.0, and how is 3.0 different?
It's not very different, and I use those, you know, as markers, you know, League of Nations 1.0, UN 2.0. You know, different people might come up with different versions, but I think that was just the simplest, most basic form. And You look at the history, you know, I went through the history. Funnily enough, I was looking, I bought this at a used bookstore here in Mexico years ago, Brzezinski's Game Plan from 1986. And you literally pick up any book. I've got this one from Holly Sklar, Trilateralism. You can pick up any random book going back a half century or more from these technocrats. And, you know, you just flip open. I highlighted it the other day. But Brzezinski says in here somewhere, if I can find the highlight, he recommends U.S. supporting China's new Silk Road project. This is 1986. Or Holly Sklar discussing the Western Trilateral Commission project, where she discusses here that we're going to bring the third world on. We're going to select token third world countries, which sounds exactly like BRICS. Token, you know, Brazil, Russia, India, China, and so forth. And so effectively what they're doing is building out the infrastructure for the rest of the world that's not developed. They have to have the rails to implement the digital technocracy. And they've got to sell it, right? Who wants to join the electronic concentration camp? Nobody. But as we've learned throughout the years, if they sugar it up a bit, it'll go down easier.
So you identify the multipolaristas, it's a great term, for the people who are cheerleading this World Government 3.0 under the guise of multipolarity. To what extent do you think that these multipolaristas know that this is perfect historical continuity with all of the world government talk that's preceded it? And to what extent do you think that they're genuine, enthusiastic cheerleaders for what they truly believe is an alternative vision for world order?
I tried to be diplomatic and fair, and I said it was a spectrum, right? To be fair, and some of us over the years have unwittingly navigated this space. And as I said, I think it's a spectrum. So I think there's people who are well-meaning. Then there's people who I believe become compromised for greed, you know, grift, narcissism, and status. And then there are people who realize they've made the Faustian bargain. And I've noticed this, you know, years ago, that there is this clear pattern. And you can see increasingly followers of mine, I'm sure followers of yours on the different chats, they've become very discerning, and they can see this as well. So there's a clear pattern, a clear network. There's a clear formula where a lot of these people pop out of nowhere, and they are, some of them are nobodies, as my previous guest Yuri Roshka said, and they just have boosted accounts, and they tow a certain narrative. And I've often said that eventually the narrative will give you away. We don't need big smoking guns. Reality will become separate from the narrative that some of the alt media people are saying, and that's when we'll be able to tell, okay, this person is not tracking reality. And so I think it's a bit of a spectrum, and I got caught up in it as well, right? I was at TNT, this mysterious bag man, Marshall Jank, you know, and maybe I'm shooting, what do you call it, jumping the gun. But when you see money being thrown, I was shocked to discover Derek Brose was given money, you know, TNT Radio, myself for my individual Substack, UK Column, a whole host of others, Whitney Webb. And so at that point, you have to start asking questions.
And those questions, well, okay, I guess there are a number of ways to look at this. One is that there are some of these multipolaristas are literally, actually state media, like on RT, for example, being paid by the Kremlin, literally, like Peter Lavelle and other people who have attacked you for your analysis here. Some people are ostensibly, at least not directly, or at least we don't know and cannot prove any direct connection to state funding. But to what extent do you think that this is coming from state-funded sources?
So I do think it is ultimately coming from, to use Yuri's terms, these power centers. And just to jump maybe to the Pentagon active measure stuff, because it seems to make more sense, given now some of my skirmishes with this network, as you've noticed, wrote an entire hit piece on me. And back in July 2024, I was saying, you know, I posted that I thought this was a security state operation, and people were like, no, it's just some idiot on the internet. And I'm, no, I can tell this is security state. And then in August, they raid Scott Ritter's home. And then in September, they out Tim Pool and Dave Rubin with the whole tenant media thing, where they were unknowingly receiving Russian financing. So when you look at that, and then you look at what's happening with this German bagman, so to speak, who lives all over the world, I begin to wonder. And then these Pentagon active measures, these anonymous accounts who keep towing the Pentagon narrative, that's a flag. And they question anyone, especially us Westerners, you know, yourself, Canadian. They got you as well. I included a screenshot with you and Riley, who's people who are anti-war and anti-technocracy, and pointing out how it's the West, they're calling us Russian agents. And I'm like, wait a minute. What if I think they're obfuscating. They're trying to put the blame for this globalism, which includes BRICS, on Russia, this network of Dugin and Alex Jones. And I think it's to obfuscate that it's actually coming from Pentagon, EU, London, and possibly to entrap us. So what if some of us are receiving finances, and at some future date, the regime, the system can turn around and say, everybody received thousands from what turned out to be Russia or China. I'm deplatformed at best, and at worst, fined or jail time, as we're seeing with people. So something is up here.
Tell us about your deplatforming from, was it PayPal? How did that happen?
Right. Like, I went through the article, in hindsight, I added some details which I hadn't in the past, that I had this Associated Press journalist contact me in 2020. I learned in my late research for the article, I hadn't known that in 2019, he was part of some Associated Press fact-checking disinformation group in 2019. Then he emails me in 2020. I don't respond. It turned out to have been a hit piece, but he couldn't include me because I gave him nothing. And then in 2021, he publishes with Atlantic Council, NATO's think tank, the hit piece on Francis Boyle and myself. And that same week, I'm taken off of Patreon. So, you know, I believe I had links, and Mike Benz fleshes this out. This network includes NATO, Atlantic Council, DHS, all these different military intelligence agencies. And then the following year, when they roll out Disinformation Governance Board, April 2022, I get taken off of PayPal. And then I've seen some commentators on these new Pentagon active measures that I'm talking about call them Disinformation Governance Board 2.0. And literally this week, The Guardian published, Marco Rubio signed it. They approved these new Pentagon psychological operations via X. Like, you couldn't believe it. I literally called it. I was calling it Pentagon active measures on X. And literally a few days ago, they reveal that they will be the Pentagon will be running psyops on X to control the narrative. So how do you like them apples?
So it's a confusing game plan, because clearly, we have seen, you have demonstrated with no end of detail in your article that this is the globalist game plan has been in operation for generations at this point and has been concertedly worked towards by the technocratic oligarchs of all countries, but of course a lot in the West. They've been working towards this for a long time. And now they are attacking the people who are attacking that concept by associating them with the other side of this multipolar arrangement. Make it make sense to me. What is their game plan for this? To discredit us, obviously, I guess, would be, and to get rid of our voices of opposition, but then to implement the multipolar world order that we're opposing? Is that where they're going with this?
Yeah, I see it as, we can use the example of like a smoke grenade. It's fog that they've thrown as this diversionary tactic. As they're working on their plan, there's smoke and people can't see exactly what's happening. But do we really think that we're going to step backward? They've gotten this far. Do we really think they're not going to move forward with their world government? No. And so this is their next and perhaps their final play. You know, maybe this is the, the last, that last run. And so we've had the Board of Peace created by Trump. You've had Xi Jinping, as I mentioned in the article, propose global governance initiative. And I found new sources that, that Klingendale citation that I included that said that Putin's Eurasian Union was a carbon copy of the EU. I found more sources that surprised me from Chatham House and another research article that said Eurasian Union was modeled precisely on the European Union. And so I think it's as clear as day. They're creating this sort of chaos, but they're going to move forward with Brooks multipolarity, which I believe means America gets knocked down a notch and gets put in its region. And we go to regions, which then forms the World Federation. And it's unclear exactly what will be the sort of centralized structure, or might include a number of governing structures. It might include both Board of Peace and the Global Governance Initiative. Maybe one of them wins out, or Jacob Nordegaard just published his Digital Brain. It might be some UN 2.0 version. So effectively, I think that's where they're going to take us. But this is part of the buy-in process. They're trying to get global popular opinion from the global South to cheerlead BRICS and multipolarity in. Basically, it's a Trojan horse. And so they're trying to get people to not realize that it's the big one of the biggest Trojan horses we've ever seen.
That, once again, is Hrvoje Morić of geopoliticsandempire.com. And I sincerely hope that you will follow the link in the transcript for today's episode at corporatereport.com/multipolar to read that article in its entirety, Multipolarity as World Government 3.0 and its Pied Pipers, which not only voluminously and meticulously documents the very, very long tradition of world government globalists promoting global government in various forms, including the multipolar agenda, including, of course, Westerners and people in the Western technocratic oligarchic class promoting that concept, but also the rise of the multipolaristas and the people who are championing the BRICS as some sort of false saviors here. No, Russia and China are not fighting against the globalists. They are simply fighting for a seat at the global governmental table. And regional government as a de facto world government is something that's been envisioned by visionaries for a very long time, going at least back to Orwell in 1984, in his 1948 book, 1984, envisioning the world of Eurasia and Oceania and East Asia. And they're always at war with each other in some combination and some alliances, whatever. Bombs are raining down. Who knows where it's coming from? Anyway, the point is, you are slaves and serfs in the Big Brother state. And that is, unfortunately, the technocratic vision for humanity. So in order to be against that, we have to understand that system and the types of people who are promoting that. And that is what Hrvoje also gets into in that article. So support him if you can, because people like Hrvoje and myself and others are not being sponsored by state actors in order to pump and pimp a particular message, and we are not getting algorithmically boosted from being nobodies out of nowhere who suddenly arrive and have millions and millions of followers on YouTube or X or what have you. The only way information like this spreads is word of mouth. So get that article from Hrvoy and start spreading it to others. Get this podcast and start spreading it to others. It will not, this information will not get out there unless you take action to get it out there to others. And hopefully, with more people aware of the true history of this global governmental movement, they will understand that the hopium of waiting for the political savior to swoop in on the cloud to save us, oh, won't she and Putin fight against the evil globalist satanic pedophiles? No, they won't. Why is that? Why do they go along with everything, all the parts of this scam, including the technocracy, including the oligarchy, including the censorship online, including the control of their citizens and social credit, including the COVID scamdemic, biosecurity, the sustainable development goals, and everything else? It is because there's a big club and we ain't in it. They think they're in it. And that is, unfortunately, the dynamic of this. So there is a lot of information to ponder today, a lot of documented, detailed resources and links to everything that I'm talking about, everything that I'm mentioning. And then from there, exploration of all the various interviews and podcasts and episodes and articles that I've done on this subject in the past that you can get from the links in the transcript. And then following that information and the links from those different sources. So there's a lot of information to digest, but I hope that you see the overall picture. We are being steered towards a global technocratic world order of regional government where you will own nothing and you'll probably be unhappy, but they'll tell you that you're happy. And if they have their way with the brain chips and what have you, you'll learn to love Big Brother. I don't know about you, but I'm against that, no matter who is pushing it on whatever side of whatever imaginary line drawn on a map. That's the simple message for today. And if you want the message in greater detail, please go to corbettreport.com/multipolar and start exploring this information for yourself. But I think we're going to leave today's exploration there. I'm James Corbett of corbettreport.com, thanking you for investing your time in today's exploration. I'm looking forward to talking to you again in the near future. The Corbett Report is 100% listener-supported. Join the Corbett Report community to become a member and log into corbettreport.com to read the subscriber newsletter, featuring my weekly editorial, recommended reading and viewing, discounts on Corbett Report merchandise, and, once a month, a subscriber-exclusive video. Sign up today at corbettreport.com/members and help support this independent media.